The temperature's rising on the baseball fever thermometer in St. Louis as the Cardinals' spring training season is in full swing. Lots of rookies and vets in camp. For many of them, how they got there and their futures are the result of one of baseball's favorite things, statistics. Now they're more meaningful than ever as baseball has embraced them in a whole new way. It's a lot more than batting average and on-base percentage. Now every facet of a player's performance is evaluated as a predictor of success, insight into a player's future. It's called analytics. How it all happens is outlined in detail in the new book, Cardinals Way, How One Team Embraced Tradition and Moneyball at the Same Time. The author is Howard Migdal, and he joins me in studio. Howard, so nice to see you.
A pleasure to be here.
Any Cardinals baseball fan has got to read your book. As I mentioned to you just as you came in, it really gives insight into a facet of the game that we as fans know very little about.
You know, what's interesting about the Cardinals, too, is that it's a facet of the game that's been part of their history going back 100 years. And, you know, to have Branch Rickey as the brainchild behind so much of what success has followed here in St. Louis. Well, Branch Rickey was well known for a lot of his on-the-field work, but Branch Rickey was a foremost expert when it came to baseball statistics as well, brought in people to help him at every step of the way, and really made that a focus. So when the Cardinals returned to that, it was more a restoration than something new for the team.
You know, I guess most Cardinal fans know about Branch Rickey and the role that he's played with this team, although most baseball fans in general, I think of him in terms of having brought Jackie Robinson into the game.
It's a remarkable thing, and what he did with Jackie Robinson was so fundamental to the game of baseball, but it came after 25 years of building the St. Louis Cardinals. It's a thing that would have gotten him into the Hall of Fame by itself, but he had a Hall of Fame career prior to that.
You know, I mentioned the title and the subtitle of your book, and the word Moneyball comes up. Mm-hmm. I think for those who aren't such dedicated fans, we might explain exactly what Moneyball really means.
So Moneyball was a book written by Michael Lewis, and it was written about the Oakland Athletics and their attempt to use statistics to try and level the playing field. The Oakland Athletics didn't have as much money as other teams, and they didn't have the ability to scout in the same way. And so they were using stats to try and level the playing field. What's fascinating about the Cardinals' effort to do this is that the Cardinals were winning. The Athletics, at the time they employed Moneyball techniques, were a losing franchise. But what Bill DeWitt, the owner of the Cardinals, decided to do was to go into the teeth of the success the team was already having and remake an already winning team. And that's really a fascinating thing. And something that doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, as you mentioned, the fact that it was really kind of a risky thing to do, was it not? Because they were winning and it was a whole new approach.
And they had a general manager in Walt Jocketty who did not believe in these new techniques. And they had a team that made the playoffs every year but one between 2000 and 2006. And so into the teeth of that, to bring in someone in Jeff Luhnow to revolutionize the way they were doing things across the board, it's hard to find an analog for it in any other business, frankly.
Well, Jeff Luhnow was the one who got it going here, you know, following the example that Billy Beane and people like that that had previously undertaken. He is now with the Houston Astros. Mm-hmm. And I think most people remember not too many months ago, there was a bit of a scandal, a hacking scandal involving someone in the Cardinals organization, hacking for information from the Houston Astros. Just explain that, and then we'll go to some other facets of the story.
Certainly. Well, briefly on that, the then scouting director for the St. Louis Cardinals, Chris Correa, hacked into the database that the Houston Astros had built with Jeff Luhnow and Sid Majdahl and other former members of the Cardinals organization in an attempt to try and see exactly how they were doing things in their new town. And FBI investigation has led to a guilty plea from Correa. It seems that Correa was the only one involved in this particular scandal, but it really speaks to where baseball is in the 21st century, which is that information and statistical analysis are so valuable that there are teams that are fighting over it and individuals, you know, literally committing crimes to get that information.
It's valuable if you know how to interpret the information. What exactly is the kind of information that is put into this statistical pot?
It's virtually everything. It's how a player performs as a hitter, how a player performs as a fielder, how a pitcher performs as a pitcher, but it's also going and retrofitting that performance with others who came before. That is to say, okay, if you have a pitcher who did X at the collegiate level, at that particular college, in that particular level of play, well, how did 100 similar pitchers do after they performed in a similar way at that college level. And from there, you're able to project going forward. And what the Cardinals were ultimately able to do was get it to a moment where they were able to project down to an individual amount of runs created for each player that they would A, potentially draft, or B, potentially sign as a free agent. And that's, of course, immensely valuable because you can put a dollar value on it and make sure you've eliminated inefficiencies.
Also worked into the equation is the issue of character. I noticed in your book there were a number of players who were maybe could be ambivalent about some of the stats, but they did something in terms of their own personal values, for instance, that won the job for them, let's say.
Well, it's very true. And, you know, the essence of that is the uncertainty that goes into this. And, you know, there's a common misperception with a lot of sabermetrics. There's a talk about, you know, there's certainty that comes with it. But the people who are at the very best, the very top of the sabermetric movement, you know, whether it's a Jeff Luhnow or a Sid Mejdal, to the large number of people in the Cardinals organization, they will all speak to that uncertainty. And within that uncertainty, trying to find a player who's going to maximize his potential gifts is vitally important, and every bit as important as making sure you identify what those gifts are.
Not everyone may be familiar with the term sabermetrics, but that's the analytics that we're talking about, correct?
Yes, that's right. And named for Society for American Baseball Research, a group that helps deploy those statistics.
Has baseball been at it long enough to determine how accurate a predictor all of this is?
Sure. It is all as accurate as the people who are implementing them. It's a combination of statistics, of course, but also with scouting. And it's important to not to lose sight of that the Cardinals have an active and vigorous scouting department, and it is where you line up the scouting with the statistics that you end up getting the very best talent performance. Whether it's a Matt Carpenter, Alan Craig, who had several good years here as well, it was a sleeper in both cases on the stats side combined with a scout who said, hey, I think this is a really good player, someone we want to take a chance on.
That was one of the most fascinating parts of your book, I think, is blending the two together. And I was particularly struck by a rather lengthy scene in your book when the scouts are having their draft meetings and they're going over all of this stuff. I mean, they don't mess around. They really get into some deep detail, don't they?
And they really do. That was part of a 9-hour meeting that was a single day's meeting of several that took place at that spot and had taken place elsewhere around the country where the Cardinals have regional scouts throughout. But that was fascinating because in that instance, you had Dan Kantrovitz, the then scouting director and now with the Oakland A's as assistant GM. And Kantrovitz is very much a statistical or statistically oriented front office member. But he was in the same meeting as a man named Charlie Gonzalez, who wore these loud Hawaiian shirts and was very much a product of scouting, of going to four games a day. And the way in which they melded and interacted was almost the essence of the way the St. Louis Cardinals operated and operate to this day.
If you had a choice, would you rather take the advice of a really good scout or all the statistics that you could find?
Well, so if you go back and you retrofit, and the Cardinals actually did this, you would choose, I believe, slightly scouting over statistics. Now, that said, it is in many ways a false choice that's presented by a lot of people who are uncomfortable with the statistical side of things to say, you know, well, there's good old-fashioned scouting. The Cardinals never made that choice. The Cardinals have always made it clear that scouting is fundamentally important. And what you're seeing throughout baseball is everyone understands now, I think because of the Cardinals in large part, you don't need to make that choice that scouting is significant, stats are significant, and simply it's about getting the best available information, and often that information varies in source.
How do the players feel about this?
It really varies even to this day. You know, there are players who will say, you know, look, the stats don't matter to me. I'm not paying attention to it. But there are a lot of, and increasingly a large number of players I speak to whenever I cover major league clubhouses who they're paying very close attention and are even learning about ways to improve their own particular skills based on the numbers that they're able to see. And so, you know, it all comes down to sort of the way a particular player approaches his game. But anytime you can add that intellectual element to it, you know, certainly for players who are capable, it's a remarkable thing.
Of course, all of this is going on. They know it. The players know what's going on, but they don't know exactly what is being said about them, what information is being disseminated about them.
It's true. You know, there was a player named Austin Gomber who's an up-and-coming player in the Cardinals organization. Yeah. And Gomber was discussed in terms of his fastball, in terms of his changeup. But the real question was, does he have that curveball, that plus curveball? And, you know, this really is an advanced stat. This is a starting pitcher. You really need those three pitches. So the Cardinals have him down in Jupiter and trying to find out whether he can throw that curveball. And for all the information, and you want as much data as possible, it came down to one pitch. Gomber goes out to the bullpen. Everybody's watching. Dan Kantrowitz is watching. Charlie Gonzalez is watching. And he throws an absolute gem of a curveball. And it ultimately got him drafted by the Cardinals. And I asked him a few weeks later whether he knew. He did not know at the time that the pitch he threw would be so fateful in the future of his career.
But he remembered that pitch, and he said it was the best pitch I've ever thrown.
That's exactly right.
Right.
And so it was fascinating to see.
You know, most people associate all of this with Oakland because of the book Moneyball. But I gather that it's the Cardinals, and you've suggested that the Cardinals are really kind of ahead of the pack. They're certainly going back to the Branch Rickey days, but I mean even in the more modern time that they're ahead of most other teams, or were.
And a big part of the difference here is that Oakland was viewed in a lot of circles in baseball as an outlier. You know, Oakland needed to do this. It was a necessity. For the Cardinals to do what they did, for arguably the most tradition-bound team of any in Major League Baseball to undertake this and to succeed with it, really, I think, said to the rest of the industry, this is what the 21st century is like. This is what's actually going to happen going forward. Oakland was not some sort of outlier, that this is the reality of baseball as it exists now.
Let's talk a little bit about the role of Cardinals ownership, the DeWitt family, and John Mozeliak, because they are key players, obviously, in all of this. And they bought into this whole process completely.
In terms of Bill DeWitt, when you talked about Branch Rickey, and I think that's really important, Branch Rickey's right-hand man and ultimately the first director of his farm system was Bill DeWitt Sr., Bill DeWitt Jr.'s father. There was no such thing as a farm system before Branch Rickey, and there therefore was no such thing as a farm director. Bill DeWitt Sr. was therefore the first farm director in Major League Baseball history. His son was raised by that man. He was raised learning baseball the Branch Rickey way. And so as early as 1965, when Bill DeWitt was a graduate student at Harvard getting his MBA, DeWitt wrote about the role the farm system would play, the role that advanced statistics would play, in a fundamentally fascinating paper that I was able to come across in the midst of my research. And it really spoke to the direction the game would be going. Now, as far as John Mozeliak goes, it's a little bit of a difference. In terms of Mo was was raised by, let's say, Walt Jocketty in the game of baseball, and Jocketty brought him in and mentored him in a fundamental way. What he also realized was that the game was changing, and by operating as sort of a moderate figure in what was a fascinating civil war between two sides within the Cardinals front office, he was able to put himself in a position where he could keep both sides comfortable and ultimately implement this new vision once he succeeded Walt as general manager of the team.
And he succeeded Walt because Walt did not buy into the program.
Walt did not. And, you know, when I talked to Walt about this, you know, in terms of the book, he realizes that he should have. And in fact, you're seeing the Cincinnati Reds, where he's the general manager now, employing these techniques more and more. But it is also very notable to me that Mo was recommended not just by Walt, but also by people on the statistical side. And he was able to, you know, essentially be the consummate politician, which in many ways is as important in the general manager job as understanding the complex statistics.
We should point out, in all fairness to Mozeliak, that this was not a coup. Mm-hmm. You know, he got the job fair and square because he kind of went along with the program.
No question about absolutely. And it was quite the opposite of the coup, that as Walt was being let go, Walt was recommending Mo for the job, and Jeff was asked something very similar and came to the same recommendation. So, no, it was by acclamation. It's a remarkable political feat to be the consensus candidate in what was such a fractured organization at that time.
One of the things I look forward to in your book, and I was not disappointed, was something that I've felt for a while, and that is about Albert Pujols. Hmm. a great hero here. He's still revered, no question about that, in the city of St. Louis. But I always felt that they not only did they not want to pay him $234 million, I think it was, for 10 years, but that the stats were showing that, you know, the man was wearing down a little bit.
To have a player in his age 32 through 42 seasons, which is what you would have been signing Albert Pujols for here in St. Louis, is asking for someone's decline phase. And he's had four very good seasons out in Anaheim, but not nearly at the level that he played here in St. Louis in what were his peach seasons, you know, and any model would tell you would likely be his peach seasons. What's amazing about what the Cardinals managed to accomplish is they didn't pay a short-term price for the long-term of not having him in his latter 30s and into his 40s. The draft picks that they received as compensation, they were able to turn around and use on Michael Wacha, who became LCS MVP as quickly as 2013, so the second year after Pujols left. Stephen Piscotty now is going to be a regular and is a real significant part of the Cardinals going forward and was already a contributor to a playoff team here in 2015. And so they've really had their cake and eaten it too in a fundamental way with Albert Pujols.
And I get the impression, given the stage that he is in his career, Matt Halliday is probably going to be subject to the same kind of thing because he's 36, I think, 35, 36, something like that, and in the last year of a contract.
It's a difficult thing, and trying to figure out exactly what Halliday will be going forward is difficult, not only because of what he's meant to the team, but also because the Cardinals have so many good young outfielders potentially to take his place. But yes, the Cardinals have had to make difficult and hard decisions, and I guess, you know, if you were a Cardinals fan, the fact that they're so good at making those difficult and hard decisions is something that you should take comfort in if a player you care about moves on.
Are there any players or a player or two that you might mention whose career was absolutely saved by this whole process or whose career got started as a result of this process that you would know?
You know, to me, Carpenter's a great example.
Matt Carpenter.
Yeah, Matt Carpenter is a player who was not valued by other teams the way the Cardinals valued him, and they signed him. They brought him through the system. He learned the infield through the George Kissel methods, you know, which shouldn't be undersold. You know, coached with the Cardinals for 68 years and came to the big leagues. He was valued enough that that John Mozeliak went and signed him to a six-year, $51 million contract extension, bought out some free agent years, and has helped build the team around Carpenter in a way that I'm not sure other teams would have. The net result has been a tremendous amount of success, and Carpenter's been a very important part of the Cardinals, and now they have him signed at a very team-friendly deal for years to come.
Have you ever gotten used to the amount of money that they're paying these guys?
You know, I have. You know, it comes down to, for my mind, baseball generates billions of dollars every year. And so ultimately, that money is generated by what? It's generated by the players on the field. And, you know, the owners certainly deserve their fair share. But to my mind, the players deserve that money as well because it won't go to underpaid teachers if it doesn't go to the players. So it ought to go to the players who generated it.
Well, getting back to the analytics part of it, can you cite any players for whom this process did not work? In other words, they were elevated to a certain stature but never delivered.
You know, it's hard to say. The Cardinals, again, remember, have both elements working. So there's scouts that are coming through and saying, you know, look, I've seen this player and I'm very impressed, that go along with the analytics. And so the Cardinals have had a lot of success. There are always going to be misses along the way. And there have been with the Cardinals, as with any other team. And that comes down to, again, what we talked about earlier. There's no certainty. There's no certainty with scouting. There's no certainty with analytics. It's a bunch of very intelligent people trying to get as much information as possible, but ultimately doing the best they can with human beings. And so there are always going to be misses. Really, the question comes down to trying to stack the odds in your favor as much as possible.
I wonder what the next step could be in terms of evaluating players. I'm sure they're always looking for ways to do that.
And one of the keys may well be psychology. And, you know, it's a fascinating thing. One of the sad things about Chris Correa not working out, and in fact, you know, having this sort of tragic downfall when you think about it in terms of his career, is that Correa had a background in psychology. And I do think it's worth wondering whether there are going to be ways to isolate individual psychological analytics to be able to determine, what players' mindsets are like. Because like we talked about, you know, the stats will get you so far, the scouting will get you so far, but figuring out how much a player is going to devote to his career is going to go a large part towards determining that missing link.
That's another part of the story that I found most interesting in your book, that there are a lot of very smart people in the game of baseball. Mm-hmm. We sometimes tend to think, particularly with regard to players, that, you know, they graduate high school and then they go into the game of baseball and are not very well educated and maybe not so smart.
It's fascinating. You know, what Mark Twain said? I never let my schooling interfere with my education. You know, at the end of the day, the intelligence that the players have, you know, really varies just in the same way it would with human beings across the spectrum as well. But you look at someone like a Corey Baker, who I talk about in the book, who's a minor leaguer, you know, I reached AA last year, but just very, very bright and very much a self-made player. In this case, had been a walk-on high school, college, now made his way all the way to AA, pitched to Yadier Molina, and used his intelligence to increase how hard he threw his fastball. And so, you know, that is key for many players as well.
I'm not sure that this is the player, but you had one player in there that the ownership was afraid that he was so into education that they would lose him, that he would go back to college, and that therefore should they invest in him or not?
I mean, there are always those questions. And, you know, there's Nick Thompson as well, who graduated in 2.5 years from William and Mary and a terrific hitter. But the question was, you know, would baseball be his number one? And he's very devoted to it.
In terms of gathering statistics, you mentioned Yadier Molina. There are a lot of players that come up from the Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico and the Caribbean nations. How do they gather early information on these guys? Is it accessible?
It is difficult, but it is not impossible. And again, a lot of that is where scouting comes into play. And Jeff Lunau, the first thing he did was dramatically increase the international scouting budget that the St. Louis Cardinals had. And so it's getting eyes on a player early on. But Carlos Martinez, who to my mind is maybe the most enjoyable pitcher to watch in all of baseball, he was a pitcher they had to take a look at. They didn't have numbers. They spent 15 minutes walking with him and had to decide whether to offer him $1.5 million. Certainly the Cardinals are glad they did.
Our time is winding down. Let me tell the audience that Howard Megdahl is having a discussion and signing tonight at 7 o'clock at Left Bank Books on Euclid in the Central West End. We all know where that is. One final thought here. And in your acknowledgments, you acknowledge the fact that the St. Louis Symphony and St. Louis Public Radio had some influence on you as you were writing it. Very quickly, that story.
Oh, no question. Just the opportunity to be able to listen to those broadcasts in particular. And David Robertson, who I got a chance to know, doing a story a couple of years ago, is something I take a great deal of pleasure in, and certainly am going to Powell Hall this Saturday night while I'm here.
I understand you're going to be on the air as well. So
very excited.
Congratulations on hitting the big time, Howard.
Thank you very much. It feels like it.
That's Howard Megdahl, and the book is The Cardinals Way, How One Team Embraced Tradition and Moneyball at the Same Time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thanks for listening. I'm Don Marsh.